Warning, ASMR. Listener discretion is advised.
Let's have brain orgasms.
Here's a superhero with the biggest pair of all.
You looking for me?
You'll see lots of weird romance.
What's that perfume you're wearing?
Super unleaded. Don't smoke. Ew, I hope you change the sheets.
Hey, Elvira, we got us a couple more volunteers.
Great, just grab a tool and start banging.
Ha, 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 ha. Ha, ha.
This is episode 18 of Lonely Hearts, the Romance Comics Podcast, where we talk about romance comics and romances in comics. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
I'm Fern.
I'm Marty.
The Forgotten One. It's been a year since we've done one of these. This is my promise to you. This is going quarterly.
So we're quarterly
this
now.
Point. Now we're not quarterly. Quarterly.
Yeah. Okay.
Not annual. but we'll really try to do this like four times a year, so like the extra week. The 4 weeks other than our monthly shows?
I don't remember discussing this in committee.
And yet, it will happen. And if it doesn't, it's one of those podcast promises.
Yeah, Mike's the captain here, apparently. He's the captain now. We do as he says.
What do you mean now?
Look at me. I'm the captain now. I have the microphone. So, I don't know why I went into Peter Lorre.
Peter Lorre, yeah.
Peter Lorre. Yeah.
This is the Halloween episode. I'm going to do it all as Peter Lorre.
I love Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
Did you know that in 2018, I've seen more films with Peter Lorre than any other actor
than was made?
I've seen like 13 Peter Lorre films to date.
Oh, wow.
I love his brother, Hugh.
Hugh Laurie. You know, sometimes you have an older brother who's not at all related to you.
Yep. Right. Like I have a 28-year-old younger brother. So, you know, that happens.
He's not 28 years old. 28 years younger.
Yeah.
Well, guys, this podcast is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
I don't know about proud, but...
and that's a shameful member.
Shame!
We never discuss fire or water on this show.
Very rarely.
Yeah.
Well, we should...
Fire...
Well, fire, yeah, fire and water. That's Rob and Shag. If it were us, it'd be...
The red dress and idiocy
network. As such, it is participating in the Dark Podcasts of Forbidden Love crossover event.
No.
So yes.
Oh, shit.
Romance, but spooky romance.
Spooky.
And today we're looking at Elvira's House of Mystery number 4, and I can give you a little background here. Mm-hmm. House of Mystery was, of course, one of DC's big horror anthologies published between 1951 and 1983.
Yeah.
It was like more than 30 years. Starting in the early 70s, the comic was hosted by Kane, while his brother Abel hosted House of Secrets. And in 1986, DC published a House of Mystery Halloween special with popular movie horror hostess Elvira as the narrator, taking over from Kane. And I guess that single issue that had enough success that DC turned it into an ongoing series. With the new number 2 coming out a few months later, Elvira led the book for 12 issues and a Christmas special. Most issues had a theme. So there's a Western issue, there's a samurai issue, there's a sci-fi issue. And number 4 is a weird romance issue. That's one reason we're covering the book. The other is that Fern has an ongoing imaginary romance with Elvira.
Oh,
I mean, who doesn't?
Tell us about it.
Oh, Elvira. She is great. I recently rewatched the movie like 3 times.
Which one? First one?
Yes, the
Mistress
only one.
Of,
no, a new
Mistress
one.
Of the Dark. What?
Yes,
yeah.
There's
came out 2000 something.
Elvira's Haunted Hills in 2002.
Apparently, it's not that good from what I hear, but at the same time, you never know because people said the first one was the next.
Right, but that's because you know people are idiots.
People have bad opinions all the time.
Yeah,
sad.
Yeah, that's like I've came to a realization after this week at work.
I never want to hear normal people talk about movies again.
Yeah, that happens.
Oh, like,
yeah.
Legitimately, yeah. I never want to hear another Steve or Mr. Everybody because it is horrible.
Yeah.
What's your Muggle story?
Oh, they were talking about, oh, I heard about this thing called Bollywood. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, Lord. Lord, he come.
Well, he's experiencing other cultures, well,
yes,
right?
Yes. However, their opinion
half
was.
Half of Netflix is Bollywood.
I know.
Bollywood's going to be like,
personally,
nostalgic for kids in the future.
Personally, I love Mugadira, where they have a machete fight in the air and the guy drifts the horse underneath the truck. That one gif everybody's seen. Yeah, and then he just flips it right back up. That's great. But then they went with a comment, if you don't have the budget to actually do the special effects, don't make a movie. Not going to the fact that this guy's going to drift a horse underneath a truck.
I think that's worthy of filmmaking right there.
Right.
It doesn't need anything else.
It doesn't.
Horses can drift?
Apparently. If two horses are drift compatible, they get into the Jaeger.
Uh-huh.
It has four legs. Now, right. The Jaeger, if it has four legs, how would it use its weapons? Would it use its weapons like this or like this?
Now, I know it's been a while, folks. So this is the show.
How
does this relate to Elvira?
So Elvira, Mistress of the Dark,
yes,
you've rewatched
yes.
it. Have you seen it, Beth?
I've never seen. I know who Elvira is.
But you've never seen anything
I know,
of Elvira.
I know of her. But I don't know anything about her. We never dated.
You would love it. You would love it. She's basically an old vaudeville comedian doing TV horror hostess.
Yeah,
it's great. It's really good.
She's like that skeleton guy that popped up in the Crypt Keeper with boobs, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, she
was before the Crypt Keeper.
Really?
She's sort of a take on, I mean, there was
that. There was Dr. Demento and Svengoolie.
And before that, a Vampira is the closest.
Vampira actually sued her?
Yes, it didn't work out.
No.
And the court decided that it's just similar. It's not the same as stealing.
Right. She got the same look, persona. But not the same personality at all.
No. So she's like this vampy Morticia. Morticia was actually her.
Mm-hmm.
She's inspiration.
She's fun Morticia Adams. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Morticia Adams.
She's an obnoxious Valley Girl version of Morticia Adams.
Okay,
that works.
And despite it all, she's actually very wholesome. Yet still has a kinky side.
There's a lot of double entendre.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot.
Yeah. That's all she does.
That's pretty good. Dollar jokes are basically double entendres.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, she's... even the movies aren't so... Because it started out as a TV show. She took over from another horror host.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a presentation. There's just like a local TV in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Back in 1981.
What was the name of the guy? Wasn't he in Gremlins 2? Wasn't it him?
Thinking of the grandpa vampire guy?
Yeah, but he had a show like that.
Yes.
Didn't she replace him?
I don't know if she replaced him specifically.
And then by 1985, she was hosting video releases. So that's sort of the brand expanded and came to be known. And I mean, we saw her on TV, not doing that show, but just like showing up on
Elvira.
Being Elvira on talk shows.
Basically how Paul Rubens went to the Oscars and was Pee-wee Herman and fought ED-209.
Yeah, her real name is Cassandra Peterson. So
yes,
but she's still active today because, like in '85, there was like the series called Thriller Video.
Yeah,
and then there were other releases or other series. Elvira's Midnight Madness. In 2004, she started coming out with DVDs after. Maybe 10 years off. And those were Elvira's Box of Horrors. And she would choose the movies and, like, the wholesomeness of it.
Yeah.
They're not very gory movies or very... I mean, the movies are pretty tame.
Yeah.
Okay. And she's there to kind of laugh at it and mock it.
She did tours for a while. And
there's, like, a roadshow.
It's a very...
It's like Mr. Science Theater.
Exactly.
She did for a bit.
But
yeah.
Before that. Because even in the movie, there's the movie screening where everybody's watching it. She's sitting on a couch facing towards the audience.
Oh, right. That's true.
Yeah. That roadshow. So that was, that's pre-Mystery Science Theater 2000, which basically is copying off of her, or like it's a takeoff of that idea. She's like the sort of personality you've never seen the show, and you never, not us.
Right.
Not really. So it's somehow this personality became something we knew, and the iconic kind of look.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s, I think that's maybe the, when she was coming out video releases, she also had her own comic, and she still has comics today.
Yeah.
Dynamite Entertainment still coming out comics.
Number 2 was recently put out, and it stars her and Edgar Allan Poe, I think. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So she's like this this brand, you could, there's like a fan club, and you could get merch, signed photos, all that sort of stuff. That was advertised in the comics.
Yeah, she does a lot of cons, too. She's just great all around.
Yeah, I hear she.
Guys, let's go see Elvira.
There have been books, there have been video games, there have been pinball machines.
The pinball machine is one of the best pinball machines ever.
I remember playing that, actually.
They had it where it was? Spin it,
I think.
It was on the Lucy Maud Montgomery 2, the ship that goes from Suri, Prince Edward Island, to the Magdalen Islands. I know, because I've been on that boat so many goddamn times in my life, and that pinball machine was always there.
For sure they have it in our town.
Do pinball machines tend to tilt on a boat?
The boat itself, actually, it's really cool. They have, like, self-adjusting ballasts. So the majority of the times the boat is level, and then you hit rough seas, and it's like,
wow, tilt. Oh, yeah. Losing a quarter. It's an odd idea to put something like that on a boat.
Yeah.
At least a ferry. A ferry's pretty,
right, but also,
pretty stable.
But also, there was a pool table, and they actually designed like a lift underneath that the pool table rests on. So if there is added pitch and yaw, the table just remains stable.
Like these unspillable bowls?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Unspillable bowls.
Yeah,
they have that for so much.
They have that for kids. It's great. It's like you can't spill it.
It's like a sippy cup, but
even if you try?
Even if you try, you can't spill it.
Do you have one at home?
I don't. I need this
bowl for nut.
It's like a weird thing where it's a bowl within a bowl within a bowl, and the inner bowl just doesn't move, and you can basically move the rest like you want, and nothing happens.
It's like a Kong treat for adults.
It is.
So the pinball machine,
yes.
Does it use like her voice?
It's a very rudimentary pinball machine. There's like sound clips.
It's got to be her voice usually.
Yeah, but it's mostly her image, and then, you know, it lights up, and you spell the letters and get points, hooray! And her boob crack's about this long on the picture, so.
And if
I know that's a visual gag on a podcast, so, you know, use your imagination.
I know people listening can't play this, but at Spin It, in our town, they have a Crypt Keeper machine you can play. It does the maniacal laugh and everything. I think they have an Elvira. They had an Elvira. I haven't seen it, so.
Spin It is not a sponsor. Other video / junk / stuff
junk.
Stores.
Those are gems.
Vintage memorabilia stores are available in your markets.
So just to balance out Marty, fuck Spin It. There we go. the balance has been restored.
We've lost our sponsor potential.
Our sponsor potential is dead. You know what? Maybe
I think we killed
the sponsor potential when we
invited Fern.
No, because I was the one there with Mike at Comic Hunter to get the Patsy Walker.
What's the number 2 answer? Ching ching ching. It's doing the show so infrequently.
I wonder whose fault that is.
Anyways, check out audible.com, the code.
go to Blue Apron. Mr. T ate my balls.
Let's get into the comic. That's why we're here. It sadly has one of the smallest parts for Elvira. Just one page.
Yeah.
And 2 short stories. So no doubt, I mean, this series was publishing inventory material left over from DC's other anthologies that were dead by the early 80s and were never used.
Basically, let's put this out so we can renew the copyrights on it.
Got a couple of weird Western tales. Let's put Elvira in between because you can tell she's not actually the narrator once we get into the story.
Yeah.
And the 2 stories are very dissimilar. But inked by the same guy. It's just like, here's the pencils.
Yeah.
Jim Fern.
The guy was named Fern. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, hey, Fern.
It's anthology stuff that she was just like, okay, Elvira, we'll do new pages with Elvira. So sometimes there's like 3-4 pages. There's a little story. She's very often just mocking Kane, who's either not there or off stage.
Well, that was the funny thing. She's like on the cover. She's in the first page. And then we never see her again.
So that's too bad. But it's just like the issue that we can cover.
Yeah.
I think the other issues of the series are generally better. This isn't one of the better examples.
Right.
It just happens to be the romance one, so to speak. That one page that she's in will be interpreted by our friend Amidi from Ohatmu or Not, also a big Elvira fan.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we introduced her to Elvira, like, was it last year?
When we watched that movie, yeah.
I had mentioned it to her, like, I think it was a day or two before you guys decided to watch it. It was like, Emily, you really should watch her eyeliner wing game is on point.
You should. I think Elvira liked one of Emily's pictures on Instagram, and she, like, geeked out that day.
Oh, wow.
So that's that will be our short Romance Comics Theater segment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back with the stories themselves.
Did you know that Kane, the former caretaker of the House of Mysteries, is a real person? Yeah, as real as I. Well, in my search of the house for clues of his whereabouts, I found an old photo of Kane with his brother, Abel. It was taken before they had that falling out, when they were young and innocent. You know, I got a feeling that old Fuzzface is still, innocent. If you get what I mean. I mean, that could explain his demeanor. I mean, you know, past a certain age, the more innocent you are, like, the meaner you...
Elvira!
I think I hit house too close to home. There's also a study of old Moss Mug done by my real close buddy, Sean McManus. Colored by a real living doll, Renee Reynolds.
Elvira, in hopes that you soon will be able to show photos of Kane as he is today, we caution you to pay close attention to the following.
Well, it's been, you know, like, I mean, real.
Thank you, Amity. Thank you, Elvira. And, well, that first story by Heather Kilgore, Gail Montgomery, Rory Metcalf, took three writers to write this, and Jim Fern.
Well, apparently two women, so hooray.
Yeah.
That's progressive. And it's a nice story.
It's called Light of Day and Dark of Night. It's basically the narration is all bits of poetry from similar texts about impossible loves or dead lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And the two souls in love through the ages appearing. It's a bit of a poem, you know, a visual poem supplemented by...
In the Star Wars universe, they are called tone poems. But we're not going to talk about those ever.
Why are tone poems a Star Wars thing now?
In the prequels, all the DVDs with the extras,
mm-hmm.
there's a section that's called tone poems. And it's like power, responsibility, and all that. And it's all the
And it's also like little montage.
Yeah. It's garbage.
Well, tone poems are a thing. The poems in the or the text that they use to narrate the story include William Morris's Defense of Guinevere, Shakespeare's Troilus and Cressida, and Romeo and Juliet, Edgar Allan Poe's Annabel Lee, and Boccaccio's Troilus and Cressida, which are two different poems. So what do we think of this?
And Post Malone's Congratulations.
and a dirty limerick.
Pop references for the young crowd.
Hey, man, we're getting them clicks.
We don't have a young crowd. Let me tell you that right now. Hello, 40-somethings.
If you're asking who Post Malone is, do not Google it. Stay in the dark.
What did you think of this story?
That was amazing.
I loved it.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like in comic form like that before. The strips were good.
Yeah.
Like, the art was very nice.
Yeah, the art had a purpose. There was always either an absence of color in certain things, or it was just very specific set of colors.
Yeah, and how the woman, her silhouettes were always white.
Yeah.
And that guy's was more like a shadow.
And then black, flips. Like, there's one scene where he picks up the rabbit. The rabbit's like, okay, this is happening. And then the spirit forms behind him, and then the rabbit is like, peace out, and just bounces, as a rabbit is wont to do. I do like that every time. So every time in each panel, whenever there's a quote-unquote gust of wind, it always originates from one of the characters. Always. Yeah, the transition into the birds, but it's also, at one point you go, once it really starts to get into the, oh, he's actually talking to her, and she's like a little spirit hand coming out of the ground or the tree, they're talking about, oh, I wish you were here, but you're here, but I'm still wishing you were here, because it's more, they wish they were there, because they're...
ghosts. Yeah. This story, I totally understand why it was, I guess, shelved or not used, because that's totally like a thing you'd show your editor and they'd be like, what the hell is this crap? Like, and you'd be like, no, it's super beautiful. Like, it's wonderful. We're using poems and...
It's a horror comic.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to be a horror comic. What is this shit?
Like, or then your editor's like, bring me pictures of Spider-Man.
All the time. Every day at work.
Counterpoint, Bess?
I thought it was...
Bass is here.
I thought it was nice and elegant and, yeah, and purposeful and very poetic. And actually, at the end of the comic, mm-hmm, there's this, you know, these gusts of wind, yes, going all around, and then there was this picture of this leprechaun guy.
Yeah,
and I thought he was part of the comic. So I was like, ooh, dead lovers, love beyond the grave, spirits coming together, and leprechaun. What the hell is this?
Yeah, what am I
missing?
It is the Sean McManus drawn picture of pinup of Kane that Elvira promised us.
I don't want to see the person who puts that up on their wall as a pinup.
I was like, oh, what the hell? What the hell is leprechaun? What's I did? I know. I don't even know Kane.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I was like, what? This is a whole new thing. Why?
And it's the thing Elvira said we'd see.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but
art's gorgeous on that.
I was just, yeah, the art is gorgeous on that.
Yeah.
What did you think of the art on Elvira as the one page?
The
cover. We haven't even talked about
that.
You know
what? The cover's great.
It's a peekaboo.
Yeah, the cover's great, but I felt that the pinup from, it's not a pinup, but it's just her full body first page.
A splash page.
It felt like it was rushed.
It probably was.
Could have been a lot better. It could have been a lot fancier. It could have been a better pose. It could have been, but it wasn't. So I was kind of like let down a bit.
There's a lot of cheesecake in some of the other issues.
Right.
You get some pretty good Elviras. The Christmas special has a Grimoro Elvira in a Santa version of this of her outfit.
Corazón!
I'll put a lot of these images that we discuss on the website at firewaterpodcast.com. So
okay.
I would have liked, you know...
I would have gotten them at another one.
I would have liked, like, the iconic Elvira on, like, this couchy.
On the reclining
couch. Yeah.
The chaise longue.
Yeah, if you're going to do Elvira for, you know... And this is issue what? For... I don't know.
I think you're right. It was rushed because, like, the picture is just her standing. Yeah. And most of the page is those speech bubbles.
Right.
They could have done, like, two pages. Like, now it'll fit in one.
They could have broken it up in several panels. They could have broken it up into two pages. But they just put... All right, we need to get this out the door in 3 days.
Yeah.
You draw Elvira. You put some text on it. You color it. I need this yesterday.
Well, from reading a bunch of bios from comic creators or manga creators, you realize how many of these comics, all the good, were like, oh man, that was a brilliant decision, was a last minute, shit, let's just do this.
Yeah, it's a
deadline's
meat grinder.
Tomorrow.
It's a meat grinder.
Yeah, it's just shit like that.
I don't disagree.
Found the six of us and dropped us in the meat grinder.
Elvira is basically the, you know, sort of victim to the fact that the file stories they wanted to use were longer, perhaps, than most, and that they had this pinup that they wanted to use, and it's like, here's the conceit. Elvira's going to promise a picture.
Yeah.
And then we're going to say, ooh, the house is talking, and the house is going, oh, before you show Kane's pictures, you should listen to this story. And then I don't know if you get that lesson from the story.
No.
In this episode, you will listen to Elvira talk to you about something that will take up the last 5 pages we need to complete this book printing.
Well, that's what's funny about this. Elvira's like, stay tuned.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, guys, we have 7 pages. Fuck. Okay, tell this dude to draw a 2-page splash of this. No, he's already working on this. Fuck. All right. Shop it out to one of your freelancers. I don't care.
No, that's what's funny about this. The conceit is, like, stay tuned and you'll get a splash page. Like, it's not a show or a movie. I can just flip to the splash page. I'm not staying tuned.
Marty just in act of rebellion just goes, Elvira, splash page. Fuck you.
Well, the reader who goes, poetry, flip, 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 flip.
Well, yeah. But then again, are they really readers? I mean,
14 words in that poem. I mean, you can read it. Look at the pictures, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I mean, most of it is gorgeous artwork.
Look at the pictures, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on Light of Day and Dark of Night?
That was gorgeous.
It was really good. I liked it. Kudos to all
more stuff like that.
Yes.
Well, let's see if there's more stuff like that in this issue. The other story is by Dennis Yee and Jim Fern. It's called She Knows Someone Is Watching Her. It's a stalker story.
It always feels like somebody's watching me.
And but I cannot see.
So this character is, and this is all narrated, there's no dialogue. This is why we didn't do any Romance Comics theaters based on these stories. It's, you know, it doesn't work as a script.
Someone's going to read poetry for a bit with no context.
I thought about it.
But without the images, it'd be just like, huh?
Yeah, what? And this one's just narration, so it'd just be like somebody reading the story.
And then you'd have
it's not so theatrical.
The same person having to do all of the voices.
So basically, the story, the protagonist is a woman who is being stalked by this pudgy guy. Who lives with his mom. Well, he doesn't actually live with his mom.
He used to.
He's in his mom's house.
His mom lives with him.
You know, he's calling and hanging up. And eventually, she decides to fight back because the police can't do anything.
Well, you know. Speaking of the police, just listen to Every Breath You Take and that's what it is.
Yes. You know what? I'll give you that one. That was a
I never thought of that.
Yeah. She decides to take back her life. And one of these times on the phone.
I will say, with that move that she does, that's one hell of a power move. Knowing the dude is going to call and go, hey, want to go for coffee?
And he says yes. And then he starts that night.
Yeah,
she goes to the coffee shop, and he's sort of trying to prepare for the date, and
by eating beans.
And his mom, he imagines it's like a psychological horror thing.
Yeah,
the picture of his mom changes expressions.
Yeah,
and he hears kind of her voice.
Yeah,
and he thinks that she's saying,
"You've been a bad boy. Yeah,
don't be a bad boy again, Roy." And he sees her on the TV, and he's seeing her everywhere. He's seeing her head in the fridge.
Which, you know what?
When and I thought...
That's the thing. That's the thing. I actually looked over that panel a bunch of times because when I saw the head in the fridge, initially it triggered me like Creepshow.
Yeah, exactly. I really thought it was a Creepshow scenario.
See, I knew it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, is the head in the fridge actually real? Like, he either killed his mom or whatever, kept the head, and then he's seeing the spirit elsewhere. But I looked at it again, and it's like, no, this is just a manifestation of her head in the fridge.
Yeah.
Ah, see, I tend to disagree.
Well, I mean, it's very well preserved, and it's just next to the milk. I mean,
yeah.
Thing is...
Did he just kill her?
Everywhere else, she's a reflection. Yeah. In the fridge, there's no reflective surface.
But he's surprised to see her there.
Yeah.
Is he?
I don't know. It's open to interpretation.
I mean, you open the fridge and there's a head. You'd kind of jump a little bit every time.
Do we see the fridge before at all?
I don't think so.
But they do mention, like, he's been living on his own for, like, was it 2 years?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that the head would be that preserved just in the fridge.
I'm just saying.
You know, he breaks down, sort of promises his mom that he's not going to be a bad boy anymore. Right. And essentially, he leaves... Right. This girl alone.
I will say the coffee shop. There's a few panels there when he's eating. I don't know what the perspective was. I think that was a few rushed panels because he's sitting on this one chair and the TV is literally inches away from his head and he's just eating the chili from the saucepan. And
it's either the apartment's huge or the smallest apartment in New York or wherever
it is. It's shot like a Kenneth Branagh movie because everything's at 45 degrees.
Dutch angles, right?
Yeah, Dutch angles. Yeah. And then the next panel, he is 15 feet away from the TV, sitting on a chair with the newspaper on the ground, just staring at it while eating, almost looking like he's on the toilet.
And I want to say that guy, they drew him like pudgy, but at the same time, he's got, in some panels, the biggest, the most defined arms
in the
world.
He got muscles, but he got a gut.
He's got, like, superhero arms, but just a little pot belly.
Well, he works at the docks.
Apparently. Right.
He lifts.
Anyway, she goes to the coffee shop or the diner.
Nighthawk's Diner.
And he...
one of the most called shots in comic history. It's like, come at me, bro. I'm going to call this diner Nighthawk's. Come get your money, son.
And he never shows up.
Yeah.
And he never calls again. Yep. And just walking out of the coffee shop, she knows she's free.
Yeah.
And then the final twist Because up to this point, I was thinking psychological horror. Neither of these stories felt like they were really... I mean, the souls, it's kind of supernatural, but not horror. So this was close to home kind of horror, because stalking is real. And,
yeah.
But what did it have a supernatural element?
Right.
And it just seemed like psychological horror. He just sees...
Right.
This is a Norman Bates kind of thing. But...
Spoilers.
But...
She wouldn't even harm a fly.
So, anyway, the final twist is, it says, she never realized before now how good it could feel to walk alone, because, you know, she's been a shut-in because of this stalker thing.
Right.
Still, she had a nagging feeling someone was watching her. And the twist is that you see the spirit of the mother smiling over her in the sky.
Right.
So there is a supernatural element. It really was the ghost of the mom.
Now,
the mom killed the guy.
No, he didn't die.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, he didn't die.
That's my theory.
No.
No, the mom killed the guy to protect the lady.
No.
It was like, my son sucks. Let me kill my goddamn son to save this poor lady.
He just promises not to do it. He's just like...
Yeah, and then the ghost kills him.
You think there's like an aneurysm going on here?
Is that what it is? Ghost aneurysm.
Slowly
you can just put your hand in your skull and just shake things around.
It says, and slowly the headaches creep away. So it's like once he's decided not to pursue this.
Marty, why did you have to take it such a dark way? Meanwhile, she's walking down the street. Yay, I'm free. I'm not going to get stalked. And then, you know, some actual mugger shows up.
Well, like, well, she's packing heat. She's got a gun, right?
Back to reality.
Yeah.
Whoop, there goes gravity.
This weird psychological horror thing goes both ways, because we're always talking about this guy who sees his mom everywhere.
Yeah.
But this poor lady was being stalked by a real fucking person.
Yeah.
And we just skimmed over it.
She was being...
They
actually do this in the comic, because when you see him sitting down with the pot, the next page starts with her sitting in a similar position on her couch.
Right.
So you've got... We're seeing what's happening with her, and then we're seeing what's happening with him.
Yeah,
and it's supposed to create that relationship where he's being stalked by ghosts or his own psychosis.
Well, psychosis or ghosts.
Yeah, both. Yeah. It turns out both.
Psychosis.
But she's being stalked by him, so it's like we're seeing... The two, one horror is real, one horror is psychological or supernatural. Maybe the question that is asked is, which is worse? And Bess, you're saying the reality is the worst.
Reality is the worst. I mean, the guy didn't grab a gun and prepare to shoot somebody, unless that head in the fridge is real, but, you know.
Well, he did threaten her when she did go out on a date with someone else.
The reality of it is, stalking is psychological horror. I mean,
right.
He's just there all the time. You don't know how or when he sends stuff, trying to be nice. And there were quotes on that, be nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's trying to, you know, if he smiles at her, it's creepy. If he frowns, it's creepy. I mean, she just lives in horror all the time.
Yeah.
And she was going to, you know, she was going to kill somebody to get out of it.
She was going to end it one way or the other.
Yeah, she was going to go to jail instead of, you know, living with that.
Right.
And that's a big thing. You got ghosts? Oh, you're sad? Mommy's not there anymore? She's, oh, poor little boy. Poor little boy. What? You're going to cry now? I mean, he's in...
No, that guy's fucking...
I don't think I ever empathize with the male character. I'm not...
No, he's a...
Not that I empathize with him. However, at the very last panel with the reveal that... Oh, no. Mama as a spirit is real.
Yeah.
Made me realize two things. That's real shitty for him.
Yeah.
Okay? Because when she was alive, his memory's going about how... She basically just mother-henned him the entirety of his life and just gave him a real shitty existence. And then there's the one panel where when she finally died, he cried and felt relief because he was no longer under that kind of pressure, which kind of a way is him being stalked by his mother or...
Terrorized.
Like, he's cloistered, he's kept, he's... controlled by that fear because she's there, and then he felt relief. But then in the last panel, Ghost Mom is real.
Ghost Mom is real.
Ghost Mom is real.
Ghost Dad sucks. Ghost Mom is real.
What is her interest in this lady? Why is she protecting her?
No, because she knows her son's a fucking creep.
Yes, but she's also a creep.
Well, she...
No. She was a creep because if your son was a stalker, like, look, as a stalker myself...
No. Okay, Mike, I'm going to do some clicks. You're going to edit from here. So, Marty, as you were saying...
I was saying... I'm just saying, she was... The mom was probably bit crazy.
Yes,
because... Her son was a stalker creeper.
No, but I mean, she...
Moms know that, right? They should.
She probably, in some ways, feels responsible. What are ghosts, really? other than non-existent.
What are
ghosts? Ghosts are restless souls, right? They need resolution. They need to end something that keeps them here. And she knows her and the dad, I guess... She created this stalker monster. So now the only way she can rest is if she stops this stalker monster she created. But she's dead. So she can only do it in ghost form.
That makes sense to me.
It does. I do, however, think
she's like, son must stay a virgin.
Well, see, that's where more I'm going to lean to, because it does feel that we are projecting a bit too much positivity on this ghost. Because... In life...
The ghost saved her.
No. Well, yes, but the thing is she saved her because it suited her need to fucking destroy her son. So...
But let me try this.
Okay.
Let's say she's a bad person. She was a bad mother.
Right. She's a bad mom.
She's a nag.
She's obsessed.
Whatever
she is. She's a shining mom. She's obsessed with... Shining mom? The shining mom is gray. She loves her son,
not
Dan.
The shining, whoops, I mean the Carrie mom.
Yeah. That's what I was like.
I'm mixing up my Stephen Kings. The Carrie mom. She's the Carrie mom.
No, let's talk about the Cujo mom.
They're all going to laugh at you.
Let's talk about the Cujo mom.
Cujo mom. Stuck in that car, poor lady.
Let's talk about Maximum Overdrive mom. You know, Pat Hingle.
Her face on the front of the truck.
You've been a bad boy, Roy.
Let's say she was a bad mother and a bad person.
She's a bad mother.
Okay.
She's a bad person.
Okay.
She's but controlling now she's, her son.
But she's...
Right. She's dead.
She's
now,
dead. Now,
we go with the concept of a ghost being someone with unfinished business.
Yes, but who killed her?
But how about...
That doesn't matter.
How about this business?
Okay.
The idea that now that she's in purgatory, let's say,
or
she's
the ethereal plane.
I don't think she's bad enough to be in hell, but she might. Maybe she's bad enough to be in purgatory, and this is part of her purgation, where she
is that a word? Purgation.
I think so. Yes, I believe so.
I love that movie, The Purgation.
The Purgation.
Purgation. For 12 hours, all ghostings will be legal.
I ate bad chicken. Now I'm purgating.
So she will purge her sins.
Mm-hmm.
And her ultimate sin was creating this monster, as you call him. So this is how she redeems her own soul.
Okay.
By doing good on Earth as a spirit.
Right. That is one interpretation. I completely allow it. It's not that I'm saying, no,
well,
you can't have
but
that.
But I hate glad it. It'll be allowed.
It's allowed. Just, it's just that I feel...
It's allowed by law.
Yes.
Fern, arbiter of the afterlife.
Oh, shit. Guilty. I have one for
in the pond of fire now.
you will mine fire. You'll go to the fire mines.
So what were you going to say?
Okay. So basically, I just feel that that interpretation is putting too much of a positive spin on it. In the sense that I see the terrible mother in life having either a violent or unhappy death becoming a spirit. And then her unfinished business is still, you know, her son. But the way it's kind of circular, she will never be done because her son is her son and he's a man. So she's kind of going to auto-fuel herself to constantly harass him.
So that face at the end.
That face at the
end. That benevolent face looking down on the girl.
It don't look benevolent to me.
Yeah,
it looks
huge.
Like
you could eat her.
It's huge. It's kind of got this... dead-eyed stare.
This huge A
to
red
me.
A in the sky.
All right, new theory. What if this ghost mom's husband was ghost dad, Bill Cosby?
Oh, shit.
That would explain a lot.
Oh, it would explain nothing.
It would explain the monster.
Further questions. Yeah. The only thing I remember of that movie is the one British guy saying his name was Edith and that he was named after his grandmother.
You saw this movie?
Yes, I have.
All I remember for that movie is he could travel through phone line as a ghost.
And he
that was
slapped
a ghost
a dude
power.
Or
slapped
string.
The dude because, like, don't touch my daughter.
Yeah, that's my job. No, snap, we're going to click that out.
Well, this is a controversial story. I didn't expect it. But what do you think at home?
No, you're wrong. Nope.
I think your opinion is just as valid as Fern's.
I'll put some of the relevant pages on the website, and you can maybe decide if that face is sinister or not. I don't think it was.
I think it was. I'm going to do a Photoshop edit and put Mr. Sinister in the sky there, and then ask people, is this sinister or not?
Final thoughts on she knows someone is watching her.
Somebody's watching me, but I cannot see. Oh. The best Michael Jackson song. That's not a Michael Jackson song.
It's like...
Well, Michael Jackson sang on that
song. I know. He did the chorus.
Yeah. Anyways.
We'll take a small break. We'll be back with your feedback from last year.
Oh, my God. Feedback for last
year. You won't remember.
It's midnight. Podcasting hour. From fetid swamps to creepy castles, the Podcasting Hour is your home for horror on the Fire and Water Network. Join me, PJ Frightful, on this quarterly anthology podcast that gazes into the mysterious and terrifying shadows of DC Comics. The moon is full and the bell tolls for midnight, the podcasting hour.
We're back. It's the mailbag.
Mm. Oh,
yeah. Mailbag.
Mm-hmm. Scrotum memorandum.
Last time, episode 17 was about loving the 90s.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that was a great...
Kill Your Boyfriend from Grant Morrison was the comic, mm-hmm. and the Romance Comics Theater was I Was a Border Racket Girl.
Yeah, Border Racket.
About
Border Racketing.
Girls getting married for
money.
With foreigners for money. Ball. And then crossing the border.
Yeah.
I believe we called it Squash.
We played Squash.
Good buddy Ange.
Ange, she's a doctor.
Ange is the big Vegeta fan.
He says...
no, Marty, wait!
I gotta read this. He says, love this issue. Hard not to like Morrison or Bond separately, together, magic. I suppose I read books like this because this craziness was, like the drug scene of the 80s, light years away from me. So this was my peak end. My family, my college, my life were all pretty standard fare. No counterculture at all. The most progressive place for me in the 90s was med school, a very liberal institution. But everyone there had their eyes on the prize, so no weird van trips. But part of me always wanted to have some wild experience, so seeing our protagonist shed the doldrums and run off made this entertaining. Also, fabulous theater. Vera Wild says, so much to unpack, where does one start? I'll actually start with a jump at the end and say that setting the reliability of the narration aside, I kind of hate the ending, because if you're going to say that she's had these violent transgressive tendencies in youth, but put enough of a lid on them to date a man long enough for a proposal, get married, and have a kid before that surfaced again, mm-hmm. then there's a whole other story that you just decided to skip over. Did something bring these tendencies back? Was she actively fighting them up to this point? Was she just biding her time for what would frankly be a preposterously long period? No, Grant Morrison, I'm not going to let you gloss over for the sake of a wink at the reader ending.
Aw, oh, shit, Grant Morrison, you're on blast, son.
What's he gonna do?
I do expect that the relative casualness of the transvestism in the story owes to Morrison's British roots. The Brits aren't always the most progressive, but they've had a pretty cavalier attitude towards men in dresses for a pretty long time.
That's like the staple joke. Oh, it's British humor, so dudes in dresses.
Well, there's a lot of... Monty Pythons are always in drag.
Yeah.
Because they had
no women on their
cast. But there was one woman in the cast. And she's not considered part of the troupe.
Yeah.
Oh, good old British Empire. No, you don't remember. No.
But
no.
All the Dave Edna stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Eddie Izzard.
Yeah. Bless. Where was I? Although it's worth noting that Eddie Izzard, who was starting to make a name for himself by the time this comic came out, was a very progressive step because he wasn't on stage in a dress as a female character. He was there as himself, and that's a pretty vital distinction, especially for those who are some degree of gender fluid or transgender who never got to see someone just existing as that before.
Yeah.
90s was a weird time as far as rebellion goes. There was a few years of rebellion against the extremely corporate decade that came before, but it was quickly co-opted by the same corporations and sold back to us as officially licensed rebel brand merchandise.
Yep.
The fact that you could actively market something as being alternative kind of says it all. Music, fashion, movies, all claiming to be rebellious because rebellion was selling. What a strange decade to look back on. Did we know it was happening while it was happening?
Fuck yeah.
Some people did.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, I'll bite into that Kool-Aid. Yeah, give me some Hot Topic and MTV.
Yeah.
Chris Franklin says, this may have been the best romance comics theater yet. I felt I stumbled upon a Lost Powers Records romance comic combo. Great job, love the accents. That's that's an opinion. Diablo Frank says, somehow, I'd argue that my romantic life in the 90s was more pathetic than in the 80s, as my grade school game withered under the heat of that decade into damaged, clueless, limp dick outcast in the flannel age.
Oh, I love that album from Outkast. Hey, no.
My girlfriend recently posited that if she could turn back time, if she could find a way, that she wouldn't change anything to deviate from the path she's on now. I replied upon her query that I couldn't help but to change everything because I'm not the person I was then and couldn't possibly suffer the same shit shows knowing what I know now. In fact, reliving the 90s Kirk Cameron style with some sort of Days of Future Past mind swap is a recurring pastime fantasy of mine. Everything would be better.
Whoa. Let's unpack that. He wants to Days of Future Past back to Kirk Cameron in the 90s?
No.
What?
No.
Is this a let's go back in time and kill Hitler situation, but instead of Hitler, we're going to fuck up Kirk Cameron? Maybe try to get him not to be a Jesus freak? What no, the hell?
It's a reference to a movie that Kirk Cameron did where he swapped his brain with his dad.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so like father, like son.
Like a Freaky Friday situation.
Yeah. It was him and Dudley Moore.
Oh,
it was the first movie I ever reviewed for television.
Oh, no.
My partner doing the, it was like a Siskel and Ebert kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Siskoid and Ebert. And Cynthia, the girl I was doing it with, this was high school. This was, we had a youth-centric TV show when I was in 11th grade on local cable access.
Did you or Cynthia wear the Elvira dress?
Neither. Probably with kids. So I was the one who was reviewing movies, and she was the one going, but Kirk Cameron's cute. Thumbs up.
That's all you need for a movie, right?
So this goes back to my comment of, I never want to hear a normal person review a fucking movie ever.
No, well, Cynthia was a normal person, I guess.
You can't even talk. I've seen you like, there are big cars in this. Woo!
Yeah.
So like,
however, I don't go, best movie ever, 10 out of 10. I go, this is a complete pile of shit. However, for me, there are cars exploding other cars. Yes, more of this for me.
Vin Diesel fan.
It's about family, Bass.
It's about family.
We've been yelling this to you for years, and you have yet to come into the fold. You are our prodigal son.
Oh, I'm none of
one
that.
Day.
Fuck fam.
Frank says, everything would be better for everyone.
Genre.
If only because you'd have an entirely different U.S. president today. If only. He says, I agree that this was among the most engaging romance comics theaters. Well, thanks.
Okay.
And I have no memory of this.
Me neither.
Well, you didn't. I don't think you had many parts. Bass and Fern, maybe you did some of the corners.
I don't even remember this one.
It's Amelie doing voices. It's the usual romance comics theater.
It's always Amelie.
I told you, one day, I'll just do every character. Each was a different voice, and it's going to be Bizarro Theater.
I feel like we've already done that.
No, we haven't.
Can I do one where I do the same voice for every character?
Yes. Yes. And then, you know, we can have someone.
It's all a bad Western twang for some reason.
Finally, we have Dishwasher Danny. He says, hey, I've been looking to find your theme song to the show. We had a comic book romance. Any info on who sang it and where I can find it? It would be much appreciated. I think it's a really cool tune.
A year later, poor guy.
Don't
I answered him directly.
Don't you say this is the song at the beginning and the end of every podcast?
It's only on the text.
Right.
If you go on the website, it says so in the credits.
Yeah.
It's always in the credits.
Yeah.
If not, Google that lyric and it'll turn up the song. But for people who are wondering, maybe you're on a device where you can't look at screens, it's Comic Book Romance by Johnny and the Jokers, and it is on YouTube.
If you want to hear that song, it is in the new movie A Star Is Born coming out this weekend.
No.
I love... Okay, so they have a commercial
Bradley Cooper sings it with Lady Gaga. It's in there.
There's a tiny little Snapchat ad for that movie, and it's the dumbest thing ever because it's just Bradley Cooper rolling down his window going, "Hey." And then Lady Gaga turning around going, "What?
I just want to look at you again."
And that's it. It just goes straight into A Star Is Born.
It's like, "I just want to look at you again."
For natural.
Yeah, but it's like this 5-second clip that gives you no idea of what's going on. Also, Bradley Cooper's face is like 5 miles wide in that shot. I don't know why.
Ladies want Bradley Cooper to say to them, "I want to look at you again."
Hell, I want Bradley Cooper to say that to me.
Aww, hey,
boss. I want to say that to
me. Doesn't it sort of imply that a star is born because a man noticed?
Yeah.
We haven't seen the movie.
We haven't seen the movie. Really, we don't know.
I don't know.
I'll tell you something. Lady Gaga didn't need anything. She's a star.
I don't know. I haven't seen the other stars that are born.
Maybe she's not the one who's born.
Star is born ultimatum. I haven't seen a star is born.
I love someone. I love that someone tweeted Neil deGrasse Tyson exiting very angrily the theater after A Star Is Born. I'm just imagining Durant.
This is not how stars are born.
An astronomer notices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, this is all surplus to requirements.
Unrelated. Hey.
If you want to leave comments on this particular episode, the Elvira episode, are you an Elvira fan? Why aren't you?
Yeah. No, don't tell me because I will just be saying you're
soulless,
wrong.
Heartless. What's wrong with you? Sociopath. Yeah. No, it's possible, I guess. Let us know in the comments at Fire and Water Podcast.
There are people out there who don't like Vin Diesel.
I hate
Let us know at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on the Fire and Water Facebook page or even on Twitter.
Yeah.
If your opinion is very brief.
280 characters.
Half as brief as before the last episode of this show. let us know, and
we'll get back to you in 4 to 6 months.
See you then.
Here's to the losers. Here's to the losers. Bless them all.
Someone do a double entendre.
I'm glad to get into it.
That's the worst one yet.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel sucks.